Well, you know God.
God is good to me.
Say yes.
Yes, he's good to me.
He
sacrificed his life
that I
might be made free.
He made
my path to shine.
He with me
all the time.
Watch this.
He saved the soul of mine. He's so good to me.
You know God.
God is good to me.
Say yes.
Yes, he's good to me.
He
sacrificed his life
that I
might be made free.
He made
my path to shine.
He with me
all the time.
Watch this.
He saved the soul of mine. He's so good to me.
You know God
is good to me.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he's good to me.
He sacrificed his life
that I
might be made free.
He made
my path to shine.
He will
be with me all the time.
He saved
the soul of mine.
Good morning. You got to love that song. That's what you call soul. We all got souls. And we all have an interest in the topic today. It's teeth. I've been waiting for this one. In a week or two, I'm going to bring on my good friend, Dr. Randolph Aguilera, and we're going to do teeth talk. But today, we're going to get into the history of it. So you have options even before you listen to my good buddy in a couple of weeks. All right, this is Straight Talk on Health. If you didn't know, if it's your first time, get to the website, www.straighttalk.cc, and hook up the archived shows. Because I think, as you guys are finding, I'm always going to be talking about prior shows, because one show builds on the other. And that way I can go deeper with you. So if you follow me over the weeks, you're going to note that every week I can tell you more and more, because you are getting educated. So it's not a superficial plan here. All right. Now, you've noticed some people can eat sugar, donuts, etc., all day long, and they don't get cavities. And you brush 3 times a day, and you floss, and you do all the right things. You limit the amount of sugar and carbohydrates refined that you put into your mouth, because your dentists tell you that that's the right thing to do. Well, it really is the right thing to do, except you still get cavities, and they don't. What's that about? Now, I've researched this. I'm a tooth fanatic, and I learned the hard way. And I can tell you that in the literature are perspectives in dental history that offered us far more comprehensive perceptions of why some people get tooth decay and some people don't. And you got to know it. And today you're going to get it. So the first thing I'm going to bring up is a little tidbit. It's about the drill. Little things. It's so fascinating. Little things. Drilling the teeth. The conventional dentist uses a drill that produces 350,000 rotations per minute. Now, high-speed drilling, and yes, there are options, causes heat damage as you approach the pulp cavity of the tooth. And that heat damage is the beginning of the root canal. In addition to, at that speed, 350,000 rotations a minute, at that speed and the heat produced, you get what we call a negative vacuum pressure. And that begins to fracture the dentin tubules of the tooth. That's something we're going to talk about a little later, because you've got to understand the dentin tubules to really understand what's been left out in the history of teeth. So right from the beginning, dentistry's evolved, and it didn't always work like this, but it's evolved into techniques and practices that in the cost-benefit analysis, we may have to question. And that high-speed drill is definitely one of them. But I want to give you a little bit of tooth anatomy, all right? The white part of the tooth, and you know this, is called the enamel. Generally, everyone understands the white of the tooth is the hard part. It's where you get your cavities, and it's called the enamel. But here's the good part. Under the white part, the enamel, is a softer part of the tooth called the dentin, D-E-N-T-I-N. And running through all the dentin, the soft enamel, so to speak, are millions upon millions of tiny canals or passageways called the dentin tubules. The dentin tubules are going to play an unbelievably big role in the history of dentistry and how we truly should resist tooth decay. Now, these dentin tubules, they have a fluid running through them, and this fluid removes infection and, more importantly, delivers nutrition to the enamel. And we're going to build on that later. So you got to understand, enamel, it's hard. It's like hair, right? Except one thing, it's alive. It's not dead. It's not your fingernails. It's the enamel of the tooth. And it can be remineralized if the dentin tubules are delivering all-important fluids with the all-important trace minerals. We'll get into that later. But back to the history. A couple of fun facts I find fascinating. In the 1800s, dentists originally used gold, which really would have been better had they not found that gold was too expensive to use in the mouth. And so we got off the gold standard. And guys from France came in and sold to the Americas, etc., something called Bell's putty, like ding ding, Bell's putty, which was basically silver coins melted and mixed in the infamous mercury. So gold was replaced by silver and mercury. And you could fill the teeth in 2 minutes, and there was no drilling required. And that was one of the things they did because gold was too expensive. The problem is they didn't really understand what they were doing, and there was so much mercury used in that process that the tooth would die. People would become sick. And in 1845, the American Society of Dental Surgeons, so look at that, 1845, Pasteur in France had just developed his microbial theories. For thousands of years, people have been on the teeth. And in 1845, in this country, the American Dental Society of Dental Surgeons, realizing how dangerous mercury was, banned the use of mercury fillings. And originally, these dentists were called quacks. It wasn't really a condescension, though, in a direct sense, because there's a word in Dutch called quacksalber, quacksalber. And that in Dutch meant noisy peddler selling mercury contained in health potions. And mercury's often been used to kill infections. Mercury was used to kill syphilis. Mercury's been used in Eastern medicine as a poison to kill bad things in the body. But again, it's always, as with the teeth in 1830 and 40, it's a cost-effective issue. You don't want to kill too much of you. Now, you know that concept, chemotherapy. Chemotherapy kills cancer, but it kills too much of you, thus it's questioned. So back originally, mercury was looked upon in a similar vein, and ultimately, we banned it. So the bottom line was that mercury was cheaper than gold, and by 1899, now we're jumping ahead about 50 years, the American Dental Association had come into existence, oddly enough, pushing the mercury amalgam as the standard of care. Now, what changed? Well, there was a dentist named G. V. Black, and he reformulated. They took a look at this problem with the mercury, and he reformulated the mercury filling, making them less toxic and longer lasting. So that problem that originally banned it, Black solved, and the ADA agreed, and that became the standard of care. That's when it really went into the backbone of American dentistry, just at the turn of the century. Now the problem was, and this is what you're not told, that to use mercury and make it secure in the tooth, in other words, to make the mercury amalgam secure so it wouldn't fall out, to work with the metal, you had to drill a much bigger hole than if the dentist had just used gold. So I'm going to repeat that. To make the dental choice, that being mercury, effective in terms of technique, dentists found that they had to drill a much bigger hole in the tooth as opposed to gold. That's big, because that means you get much closer to the crown, and the crown gets much closer to the root canal once the decay hits the pulp cavity and the high-speed drill inflames the nerve, and ultimately the nerve dies. So this is a little thing, but it's a big thing. In the name of using a lower cost tool, that being mercury, we sacrificed enamel. Enamel we didn't have to take away, but now we do, because otherwise mercury won't work and gold too expensive. Cost benefit. You have to look at medicine as cost benefit. So now I want to emphasize is that it's innocent that we used mercury in that sense. Is an innocent choice, because you've got to understand the way medicine works. Medicine takes research, and big boards or small boards of the higher-ups make decisions. And whatever goes into those decisions is not my point. Once it becomes a decision, it becomes a standard of care. And your dentist can innocently, just as any doctor can innocently, I've seen this mistake in chiropractic, do things that are not good, all in the name of what their teachers teach them. So I want you to get that concept. Now, a bigger thing. Mercury is a very expansive, heat-sensitive metal. And as any metal, mercury expands and contracts. So when the mercury filling expands and pushes out against the tooth, and then it retracts, it comes back, it leaves a little wedge between itself and the inner wall of the enamel that it was once theoretically bound to. Now this newly formed crevice, as the mercury pulls away from the inner wall of the enamel, is the perfect place for more bacteria to invade and perpetuate the decay cycle. And this is one of the real drawbacks of mercury. So one practical tip, and we'll give you about 6 or 7 vital ones in the show today, find a dentist who will do what we call a caries dye stain test, where a red dye is applied to the tooth surface, and where it sticks to the tooth, because lots of that dye is just going to wash off, but where it still sticks to the tooth is where the filling has pulled away from the enamel. And so that filling must be replaced with the resin filling, the plastic hybrid filling, or even gold if it's appropriate. Now the next dental myth, exposed. I'm going to really explain why we really get tooth decay in the first place. And this has just gone out of dentistry. Again, you've got to get more educated. And understand that for a century now, a century and a half, since 1850, we've had an age-old debate between Louis Pasteur of France and Metchnikoff. And these two bigwigs of biological medicine, 150 years ago, had a different perspective on how one gets diseased. Now, Pasteur, a name you know much better than Metchnikoff, Pasteur said that the cause of disease or decay was the microbe, while Metchnikoff said that the environment or the terrain that created the right environment for the microbe to flourish, or I should say the wrong environment. So you had Pasteur stating, if you've got a problem, if you've got decay, if you've got disease, if you've got infection, kill the infection. The infection's the cause. And Metchnikoff, right from the beginning, was there to say, no, you have to change the geography. You have to change the terrain. You have to do things that starve out the microbe. And that was the beginning of modern medicine. So Pasteur would say, if you have a parasite, kill it with drugs. Or even kill it with herbs. While Metchnikoff would say, change the intestinal environment so the parasite has no place to live in it, and so it dies. And really, in the best of holistic medicine, we do both. We go after it with the herb, and then we change the environment. But I want to emphasize how often we forget to change the environment. We'll pay for the herb and let that do the job, and it doesn't do it completely. That's why lifestyle, education are always so critical. But the kill theory, or the Pasteur approach, has always been the medical model, while the infinitely more effective and sophisticated Metchnikoffian model, if I can call that, has not prevailed. And even holistic medicine, while it differs in terms of approach from allopathy, in so many ways is still always looking to kill the microbe. That's human nature. When something's wrong, we want to find it and we want to whack it. And it doesn't work that way. We're understanding these intelligences are way beyond our intelligences. 4 billion, 5 billion years. However you want to look at this, microbes are smart. They trade genes. They have sex. They create new species as fast as we create families. And we're always behind in this kill the microbe situation. Just now that we have the DNA techniques, we're watching these things evolve at frightening paces. Lyme disease in itself in 10 years has morphed 200 times. So this idea about kill the microbe, it's got a place. No two ways about it. No one should argue that. But Metchnikoff, change the environment. This you're going to see in the perception of how to work with chronic disease. Not acute, but chronic. You really got to start looking into that. Now, applied to dentistry, what this meant is that dentists are taught that the reason people get cavities is that the bacteria in the mouth metabolizes the sugars or the carbs, which break down to sugars with amylase in the saliva, that these bacteria in the mouth with the sticky carb and sugar on the teeth eat the carbohydrate and produce acids. And these acids dissolve the enamel of the teeth, and you call that a cavity. And the tooth just sits there crying out for help and is basically defenseless to this constant, nonstop, relentless erosion of its outer layer. And that's not true. The teeth has many defenses, but you never learn them, nor do the dentists. If you study the history of dentistry, as we're going to spend in a moment, you'll see. But presently, the dental solution is to brush the acids with a good toothbrush, the right toothpaste, floss, irrigate, and that's as good as you can do. And as your teeth fall out by the time you're 60 or 70, it's simply genetics. This is nonsense. This is a myth. This is the problem. Now, this belief system was in part founded inadvertently in 1883 by a dentist named W.D. Miller. And he basically found that if you extract the teeth, put them in fermenting mixtures of bread and saliva, you produced what appeared to be tooth decay. Now, what better proof can you get? But Miller, and this is the point, Miller in 1883, creating the foundational perception of tooth decay, believed that bacteria and acids were only part of tooth decay, not the entire cause of it. I'm going to repeat that. Miller believed that bacteria and acids were only part of tooth decay, not the entire cause of it. His belief was that the invasion of the microorganism into the acid state and then into the enamel was always preceded by the extraction of lime salts, which was the old term for minerals. What Miller was saying is that you can take sugar and bacteria and it can produce acid, and if the tooth is mineralized, it won't mean decay. I'll say that again. If the tooth loses its mineral density first, only then, and only then, can the acids succeed at creating the cavity. And that's the difference between Dr. Miller's foundational therapy or theory in 1883 and dentistry in 2011. Is originally, the research showed that the tooth could protect itself from decay if it was sufficiently mineralized, which means nutrition. And by 2011, dentists are taught that once bacteria and sugars make the acids, the enamel of the tooth has no choice but to corrode. That's big. That's really big. And it's right in dental history, right in front of us. But who reads about the past? Everything is new, newer and better and bigger and stronger. You see? Why don't we have respect for the old? Because they're not new. And in America, after you're 60, we just trash you. You go to the hospitals, and whatever you've got, you shouldn't complain, because after all, you're old. And young people work hard not to get old. And billions of dollars each year go into facelifts so we don't get old, instead of going into nutrition where we could learn how to truly not age in alignment with God. So dentistry, by the 1940s, chooses the Pasteur version of tooth decay. The one that completely obscures the tremendous importance of nutrition, which doesn't stop other renegade dentists from continuing to explore other causes. In 1922, Percy Howard had already presented before the American Dental Association his findings that he failed to produce tooth decay by feeding and inoculating guinea pigs with the dangerous bacteria Streptococcus mutans, known to cause tooth decay, and other bacteria known to cause tooth decay. And if he injected these things, think about that, injected them, let alone smeared it into their teeth, it didn't produce tooth decay. In other words, forcing the tooth to decay and then finding some inherent ability in guinea pig teeth to resist decay. However, and this was the point, when Dr. Howe removed vitamin C from the guinea pig diet, the animal suffered from rampant decay. Dozens of studies conducted by different dentists agreed with this. Another competing theory was Dr. Albert Schatz, who put forth the theory that tooth decay was heavily related to diet, trace minerals, and hormonal imbalance that were key factors in triggering enzymes which produced the subsequent leaching of protected minerals out of the living enamel. And so then, with the acids corroding into the enamel and the absence of these leached protective minerals, the tooth would decay. He found it was very related to diet and hormonal balance. And again, this means that stress causes tooth decay. That's right. Stress in the office, stress in the relationship, stress on the job, stress, the stress of life. The book, Hans Selye. Look up Lecture 3, Radio Show 3, all about stress. And I've seen this for decades in the office. Patients with normally no cavities, great dental checkups, and then all of a sudden, on a six-month span, they get 3 to 4 to 5 cavities, and the dentist doesn't understand it. And the patient definitely doesn't understand it. And that's stress. Dentists know this also. Good dentists know simply from stress, and they will tell their patients. Dr. Aguilera will definitely tell his patients. Dentists will tell their patients that under stress, chronic long-term stress, their teeth will decay. And it's got something to do with the overproduction or the underproduction of your anti-stress hormone cortisol, produced in your adrenal cortex, that has its relationship to leaching the minerals out disrespectfully to the tooth, creating tooth decay. It's just never become part of the functional model taught in dental school. But this next piece is the topper for me. This is most fascinating of everything I've heard or studied. Most interesting research I found in the 1950s was by the dentist Dr. Ralph Steinman. His entire life devoted to proving that our hypothalamus gland, that's a tissue in the brain above the pituitary, a very mysterious place in science that regulates the relationship between our nervous system and our glandular system via the pituitary gland. Now, Dr. Steinman proved that the hypothalamus gland sends out a hormone to our parotid glands in our jaw. Those are our salivary glands, so on and so forth, in our jaws, right where our cheeks widen, one on each side. We've got two back towards the ear, right in front of the TMJ joint. And the parotid gland, under command from the hypothalamus, under command from the parotid hormone, from the hypothalamus to the parotid, causes the parotid to produce a hormone which triggers the movement of a mineral-rich lymphatic fluid which circulates through the dentin tubules. That's the millions of microscopic canals, remember, that circulate through the entire tooth just under the hard enamel. And this circulating dental fluid cleans and mineralizes the teeth. So it cleans infection and it delivers trace minerals and minerals so that the tooth can recover from the acidic corrosion. It heals the decay before the decay starts. And that forgotten factor has much to do with resistance to decay. Saying that the enamel remineralizes because some cue from the hypothalamus to the parotid gland to the lymphatic channels of the dentin tubules mineralizes by delivering this fluid, if it's got the minerals, thus the nutrition, is really tooth repair. That's tooth repair. That's the body's natural mechanism to reduce decay. And then Steinman went on to find that when a cavity causing diet, so when a lousy diet is employed, that was a pure sugar diet, that was Wheaties and cornflakes and Captain Crunch for breakfast, that was pizza and Coke for lunch, that was Snickers and Coke for dinner, that was Swanson's, that's everything we've been doing in the United States since we've gotten so sick. He found that if you gave someone and animals too, this cavity-causing diet. Now check this out. The hypothalamus, the crown chakra, the high center of the neuroendocrine system, stopped producing the parotid releasing factor. So the parotid never got the message. So the dental lymph, okay, didn't get the command to keep circulating through the dentin tumules. And so the teeth were no longer cleaned or remineralized. And that's how one gets decay. This is huge and fascinating. Who would think that the master gland of the brain, connected to the pituitary, what others have called the crown chakra, definitely, I am sure, where God lives in the body, okay, is controlling your decay cycles. And it explains why so many people can stay tooth decay resistant even with poor diets. If the hypothalamic parotid relationship is strong, strong by good genes, strong by birth, strong by an intelligent soul, the remineralization mechanism through the dental lymph, through the circulation of that lymph, through the dentin tubules, will mineralize the teeth and prevent decay, even with a high sugar diet. And then Steinman went on with hundreds of studies with different animals, rats, guinea pigs, to show that there was no correlation between the acid produced by bacteria and the presence of tooth decay. Direct contradiction of the ADA at the time. So if you study the history of dentistry, there have been many perspectives stating that tooth decay is not simply a matter of bacteria producing acids intent on eating through the enamel of the tooth, while the tooth then is left incapable of resisting that acid. And I personally know scientists today working on grants, studying the probiotics, the good bacteria in the gut, because they produce chemicals that ensure you that you will reduce tooth decay. There's this whole mechanism in the human organism to fight tooth decay that we have to employ, but we're not even told. And that's because they don't teach it to the dentists. And here's the result. The National Center for Statistics, 1999 to 2002, the data compiled states that the average tooth loss in people over the age of 60 is 8 teeth, 8. Not including the wisdom tooth. So God is good to me if you got all your teeth, man, and you're over the age of 60. God has been good to you. The Price Foundation, Weston Price. Everyone should get in touch with the Price Foundation and read the works of Dr. Weston Price. Weston Price. And you've heard me mention the Price Foundation before, but in a different context. Price Foundation was started by Weston Price. He was a dentist, gave his life to explaining, to educating, to writing on the relationship between nutrition and its relationship between good mineral-rich food and tooth decay and health in general. And here's a little more history. This is going to blow your mind. This blew my mind. In 1915, Weston Price, a dentist, is appointed as the first research director of the National Dental Association. In 1915, Weston Price is appointed as the first research director of the National Dental Association. Keep in mind that the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, at this time, before antibiotics, was successfully fighting corporate pressures to process wheat flour into white flour. That the men that used to run the FDA would support your health. And here we have Weston Price, who would later play this role, and our country, our great nation, elects him research director of what eventually would be called the American Dental Association. Which is to say that in 1915, you got to remember, we're already into World War I, or within a year. That America in 1915 was operating with agencies that really did protect the health of the American people. What has happened? And that's our responsibility. So Weston Price, appointed as the first research director of what they then called the National Dental Association, soon to be the American Dental Association, publishes conclusions about tooth decay, as well as the important relationship between health and the development of a big, broad dental arch. We'll talk about that later. For now, just understand that Weston Price studied cultures from all over the world and concluded that when the population of the culture, I guess there's no other way to say it, than had faces like pit bulls, big, wide faces, well-formed teeth, well-formed symmetrical bites. The culture was sure to be healthy and tooth decay resistant. Now, Price's research resulted in many, many publications, but here's one blockbuster of a quote. This is what he brings to the American Dental Association. All groups studied, I quote him, all groups studied, having a liberal supply of minerals, particularly phosphorus in the diet, and a liberal supply of fat-soluble activators, had 100% immunity to dental caries. There it was. Which means that the first director of the American Dental Association is asked to study tooth decay, and he goes straight to diet. The diet that this nation once had when the soil was fertile, and no longer has because of poor farming practices. And I ask you to ask yourself, where are these institutions today that can tell us the inside track? Where are they? Where are they in medicine? Where are they anywhere? 100% immunity from decay when the diet was correct. Now, you've heard me talk about diet before from prior shows. If you haven't and you're new, get to the website straighttalk.cc, straighttalk.cc. And I've harped continually on the importance of a certain type of hunter-gatherer diet. And of course, the Price Foundation, which today brings doctors and scientists from all over the world to the conclusion that meat, fats, and low carbs are the way to go. I told you this would be the future of science, and it's going to be. We got locked up on the grain. Locked up on the grain for a lot of ridiculous fantasies. And then when I go outside, people with agendas, my show number 7, Jared Diamond's work in his last book, The Third Chimpanzee. Chapter 8 in that book, Jared Diamond, Agriculture's Mixed Blessings. I read that to you in show number 7 on the benefits of animal protein. Now, Price, his book is Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. Get that book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And he spent many years studying the health concerns from remote cultures all over the world. If you want to stop tooth decay in your mouth, read this book. And then contact the Price Foundation and just get informed. It's so easy to do. Okay, next point as we evolve the discussion. I'm painting a picture here of a relationship between health, health of the mouth, of the teeth, and the shape of the dental arch, which is the bite, and the symmetry of the bite. In other words, a pit bull of a face with no tooth decay represents a stronger body. And if the culture produces more of those faces, you are generally dealing with a more disease-resistant culture. What else do you need? Really? What else do we need to give our kids? Really? Do one thing if you're overwhelmed with 6 kids. Just keep their teeth. Correct. You know, one of the first things Dr. Marshall told me years ago, and he's a very tough guy, he's a very dedicated man, and I don't need to get into that. But one of the first things he told me years ago was, the thing that I made sure with my children is that they never got cavities. Now that's wisdom. There's more wisdom in that than there is in a heck of a lot of ideas about how to raise kids. I wish I had benefited from the same wisdom. But I didn't, and neither did he. As kids in New York, we mutilated our mouths. Sugars all day long. We had no concept of this. Then we learned later. But that's the wisdom that should be perpetuated within the culture. And as a priority, I can't think of a bigger one. Now, there aren't any absolute laws on any topics in health. So if you don't have a pit bull of a face, don't fret. Health is a totality of a multitude of variables. However, yes, the thick, wide jaw on top of a thick, wide neck will usually mean a set of very large adrenal glands, greater resistance to disease, greater resilience when you do get sick. Now, the point is, and this is where we're going to go, is when that the symmetry of the bite, the symmetricalness of the bite, is lost, or the teeth are in the wrong place by birth or otherwise, It's something that you need to get fixed. So when I see a patient, I always look at the bite. I want to see each tooth touching its opposing tooth. I want to see symmetry between the left side of the face and the right side of the face. And I want to see that symmetry extending into the teeth. And here's why. Each tooth is a transfer point for a reflex to a particular organ. Each tooth is a transfer point. It's basically an electromagnetic junction box to transfer the frequencies from up above and down below into the hypothalamus. And this has been understood for many years, particularly in German research. And that's if the teeth are symmetrical, though, and each tooth touches the other tooth. Mind you, each tooth is not rigid. It has a certain amount of flex. And when you bite, if the tooth touches its opposing tooth, the combined flexion of each tooth, taken as the combined flexion then of all the teeth, sends lines of force or energy into the maxillary bones, which are the two facial bones on the right and left side of the nostril. And that vibration of force hits the ethmoid bone, right in the center of the forehead, at the level of your eyebrows. And that transfers behind the ethmoid bone to the sphenoid bone, sphenoid, the sphenoid bone, about 3 inches through your forehead, center point, and straight back. That's the sphenoid bone. Now this bone, it looks like a bird, a bat. And in the center of it, directly behind the forehead, between the center point, between the eyebrows, 3 inches or so back, the sphenoid bone cradles. It's got a formation into its bone structure that looks like a saddle, S-A-D-D-L-E, a saddle. It's called the Sella Turcica, Sella Turcica. It means Turkish saddle. The Latin derivation is Turkish saddle. It's a deep chasm in the sphenoid bone, and in it sits the hypophysis, or the pituitary gland. And just a millimeter or so up is the hypothalamus gland. The whole central intelligence of the body is sitting in the sphenoid bone. So the sphenoid bone cradles this master gland in a crib. It actually looks like a crib. And the vibration produced here from the symmetrical bite, now catch this, the vibration into the pituitary hypothalamus originating from the symmetrical bite to the maxilla, the two bones to the side of the nose, to the ethmoid bone, to the sphenoid bone, to the cellical turcica, vibrates the glands and delivers a frequency to these glands, which sets the nervous system into its optimal mode. It makes your autonomic nervous system optimal. Now, this relationship, this neuroendocrine gland nerve, this neuroendocrine axis or relationship works. And again, this is the other mystery, at the speed of light. Its impulses are at the speed of light, perhaps beyond. And its impulses going back and forth ensure the organism balance, precision, and effectiveness in initiating and monitoring the trillions of biochemical reactions in the cell. So when a cell goes cancerous, the hypothalamus can see it and deliver the solution. When a virus or bacteria begins to invade an organ, the hypothalamus can see it and deliver the crushing blow through the immune system, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth. Your entire body primes itself on those intelligences. And your bite has a vast influence on your health because it's a bigger player in what we call the cranial rhythms. So that bite is just more than aesthetics. It largely controls the cranial rhythms. Now, the cranial rhythms are the vibrations between all the bones of the skull. Now, we got to go back to the turn of the century when we were more innocent and maybe a little more ignorant, but definitely more innocent. And in 1900, there was a debate between the anatomists of England and the anatomists of Italy as to whether or not all the bones of the skull had any motion between them. Because we didn't have great technology, and looking at them, meaning grossly observing the bones of the skull, you didn't see anything moving. It wasn't like saying there's a joint between the humerus of the arm and the radius and ulna at the elbow. And does that joint move? Of course it moves. You can see it move, but who could see the bones of the skull moving? So Britain said, the British anatomist said, no, there is no motion. And the Italian said, yes, there is motion. Years later, we understood the Italians to be correct in this instance, and all the bones of the skull, the parietal, the frontal, the maxillary, the temporal, the ethmoid, the sphenoid, there's lots of bones in the skull. You can separate them. You can go onto any website and look at bones of the skull, all separated out. In school, we put blindfolds on, take apart the skull, and by the feel of the bones in our hands, the individual bones, we have to piece the skull back together. One of my mentors in chiropractic school, he taught us that drill. If you really want to learn the anatomy, blindfold yourself and put the body back together, then take it apart and put it back together. And that's how he tested us, those that were brave enough to take his class. And it gives you a real understanding then that these bones do vibrate. They are in motion. They vibrate. And what drives that vibration is the bite delivered to the core of the brain. The cranial rhythms get delivered to the body from the bite to the brain back to the body at the speed of light, directing the infinite number of chemical reactions each day. You see, so we study chemistry, we study cell biology, physiology, pathology, neurology, microbiology, histology. And the reality is all of it's driven by an electromagnetic pulse of the body that we call the cranial rhythms, which is largely driven by a symmetrical bite. That's what you should let sink into your brain. That's what Weston Price gave his life to understanding. And the proof is in the pudding. The proof does not come from science. It comes from anthropology. Because knowing is believing. And they proved it. Cultures proved this. The relationship between the symmetrical, balanced bite and a long, healthy life. Now, you're going to take 60 seconds of total silence right now. And you're going to think about everything I've said. I'm going to use airtime for nothing. And you just sit on what I said. And in 60 seconds, I'll come back and we'll continue. You meditate. Okay, that's off the beaten path, is it not? A little silence. Soon the air and the water and silence will be the expensive commodities of life. At one time they were our unalienable rights, huh? Okay, so what happens when your bite is not symmetrical? You lose a little bit, or you lose a lot. Orthodontics. Yes, orthodontics, modern miracle, is not only about aesthetics, plays a much larger role than mere aesthetics. It assumes the responsibility for correcting nature's defects. And that's what medicine really is. It's an opportunity for a doctor and a patient hand in hand to correct nature's defects, to perfect nature, to serve mankind by perfecting nature. To serve nature by perfecting mankind. My patients get told to fix their bites so that each tooth touches the other tooth in balance and ease. And I regularly counsel patients as old as 60 or 70 to orthodontics. That 1 or 2 years with braces or Invisalign or retainers can make all the difference in the world. and unknown to most people, are consortiums of dentists, orthodontists, the kind Weston Price was, that have devoted their lives to proving the relationship between a good symmetrical bite and a healthy life. And if you bite down upon your teeth and each tooth does not touch the opposing tooth, that is a red flag. If you have 4 or 6 or 8 teeth that are not touching each other, that's a bigger red flag. Get to an orthodontist and ask him to correct your bite, even though you're going to find that he will not assume any responsibility for your health. And you cannot let that intimidate you. But he will assume great responsibility for your good looks and your aesthetics. That they'll deliver. But don't talk to them about health. They've got an enormous dentist, orthodontist, tremendous, rapidly evolving array of tools to deliver you the bite you want. And I have regularly seen them, and I applaud them. Conservative and all, I have regularly seen them do miracles. But you have to talk to them about aesthetics. You cannot go to a dentist and an orthodontist and say, if you fix my bite, will my pain in my neck or my knee, or will my bad digestion or disease go away? It's outside of their standard of care. Outside of specific concerns about the health of your teeth, dentists and orthodontists are cautioned by their board to refrain from any such claims. It's that standard of care thing. You heard me talk about this in one of the last shows on medical diplomacy. But it can be in your standard of care. In your standard of care can be this understanding. And if you speak to them in the confines of their profession, they will do miracles with your bite. Do not think you're too old to get your bite balanced. And I want to remind you that in my clinical experience, from counseling patients, from young to old, nothing works better than getting the teeth moved by a gifted orthodontist or the equivalent. If you can pull that one off, if you can negotiate that one, it worked far better than guards and all sorts of things that don't really move the teeth. It's an art form. Okay, now TMJ. TMJ, the infamous TMJ. So poorly understood in the same vein. When you clench and grind at night, you cause yourself a lot of trouble. Your dentist will look at the wear pattern of the tooth, and say, hey, you clench and grind at night. Your teeth are being worn down. That can throw off your bite. That's not good. Dentists know this. Take them seriously. You see, but what's built into this is the quick fix. It's called the night guard. And the night guard doesn't stop the clenching. It'll stop the grinding. And if you have no choice, get one. Because when you clench and grind, or just clench, you shut down your cranial rhythms. You shut down the full body scan that the hypothalamus does at light speed, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the rest of your life. But why do you clench at night? You clench because there's great inner frustration, great inner turbulence. Things you need to say that you're not saying. Issues that have not been resolved that frighten you and frustrate you, and there's no way out. You've tried and nothing works to straighten out those issues. And as you sleep, you process these issues as you dream through your subconscious as you sleep or barely sleep. And that's why you clench. So what do? That's a show in itself. And in the upcoming months, we'll bring people on that'll address that with you. But my theme is always, if the quick fix is good, do the quick fix. That's where the smart money is. If you can get it done fast and easy, do it. So if you're clenching and you're not optimizing that cranial rhythm, and that clenching even more is producing headaches, this is a shortcut. Go on YouTube or Google and get familiar with the work of a dentist named Dr. James P. as in Paul Boyd, B-O-Y-D, James P. Boyd. And he developed something called the NTI, the Nociceptive Trigeminal Interceptor. And you can Google his name up and Google it up and watch his interview with Diane Sawyer years ago on Good Morning America. Very convincing, very valid work, very brilliant approach. Now the NTI is a little plastic cap that fits over your two front teeth, your Bucky Beaver teeth. And the idea was is that if you could make the person who clenched, if you could make their front teeth touch at night when they're clenching, like clenching is in a dream, if you could make the front teeth touch before the back teeth touched, see, normally it's the other way around. When you clench, your back teeth touch, and then your front teeth touch. But either way, when the front teeth touch, the brain picks up signals, and you open the mouth. The brain's not going to let you crush your teeth when you sleep. So even though you sleep, your subconscious autonomic nervous system is at work. And the way it works, and Boyd understood this, is that once the front teeth touch, after the back teeth touch, and you suffer from that, then you stop clenching, but then you go back to clenching, then you stop clenching. And this back and forth was enough to shut the cranial rhythms, destroy the bite, and then grind your teeth to dust. We'd wake up with headaches, migraines, then see the Diane Sawyer interview. So Boyd's idea was to put this flap in, this little plastic flap over the two front teeth, and then at night, when you closed your mouth on your way to clenching, the front teeth touched before the back teeth. The front teeth touched before the back teeth, and that signaled the brain to open the bite before you touched your back teeth. Brilliant. Simple, profound, FDA approved. The rest is history. And for many people, it stopped clenching dead in its tracks and cured all the secondary symptoms of clenching, from migraines to indigestion. Today, I know, because I send patients to different places, the NTI costs anywhere from $300 to $1,000. And Dr. Boyd's trained many fine dentists and affiliates all over Southern California. Now, nothing always works. Nothing. Nothing always works all the time for everybody. So I've seen the NTI, in my experience, and this is open to debate, work about half the time. 50% of the time, someone will get a quick fix. But for $300, $400, $500, and there's no side effects, no kickbacks, no nothing, nothing invasive, and it can stop something like this, go for it. Try to find someone that's really studied closely with Dr. Boyd, that's truly studied, not just threw him on the resume in a weekend seminar, but got close to him. Now that's the quick fix. That's the quick fix. The deeper fix is another show. The deeper fix requires more understanding on your part, and I can only brush it today. You need more education. I've got to give you more basic framework to really get this. But let me give you a short synopsis, okay, of how you stop clenching and how you stop releasing the anxiety instead of holding it, even when the anxiety is deeply within you. And you already know the answer. It was the last week's radio show on the Rule of Four. I want you to make this connection. You got to make this connection. So you learn to integrate. Otherwise, you just learn the information on one level and it doesn't become functional. If you clench at night and your NTI doesn't work, and even though you have a garden so you don't grind, you're going to still clench. You are hurting yourself. You will go to your grave influenced negatively because you clenched your whole life. So here's the solution, and it's very fundamental. You've got to clean your blood, and you've got to stretch your tendons, and you've got to remediate your scars, and you've got to purge the negative psychic patterns out of your body so your soul shines through, so you resonate on a different plane, so you open your meridian system. So whatever that pattern is, from you're in a relationship you don't want to be in, to your parents didn't love you, to you've suffered, to you're sick, to you lost your job, to you thought you were going to hit the big time and in your mind you never did. Whatever your issue is, whether it's real or delusional, at some way along the line, go back, listen to last week's show on health and resonance. Somewhere along the line, if you do the work, the negative pattern will come to peace within your body and you will stop. You're clenching. That's the real solution for it. But that may not happen in 6 weeks. You can't take 50, 60, 70 years of the kinds of traumas that I hear about on and off the show. You can't do that in 6 weeks. So you got to sign on for the long term. The long term's against 5 or 6 decades of life, a year or two. That's not long at all. And it's exciting. It's what you came here to do. It's what you came here to learn. So if you're clenching and that NTI doesn't work, that's a red flag. Now, even more complicated is when people clench and their bite is not symmetrical. Put that together. You're clenching, but your bite is not symmetrical. It's one thing to clench with a symmetrical bite, but now if it's asymmetrical, boy, that's insult to injury. And yet even this can be completely fixed. Now, where we're going to go with this future tense is to understand what it is when we say emotions trapped in the body. Emotions. The little child, when they get pulverized with emotional trauma, and we all do one way or the other, no matter how kind our parents are, no matter how perfect the society, to be human is to be wounded. It's an aspect. And with some people especially, that tension in response to the emotion stays trapped in the tissue. And you're trying to work it out at night. That is why you clench. But clenching is just a small part of a bigger issue. And that is how to resolve emotional patterns in the body in general. And many lineages of psychiatry, of psychology, of massage therapy, of healing devotions have given great commentary and had great effect, but you've got to buy into a certain principle, you see. And again, okay, psychiatry is missed, and much of psychology is missed. And that is that the pattern that you're looking to purge is not in your brain. It's not in the neck up area. It's the wrong arena. It's not the only arena. It's in your body. Now, other cultures have understood this, and other dimensions in American history have understood this. And we'll be getting into this more and more and more. And that's almost an hour. Time goes fast. So, from the myth of brushing your teeth, to the importance of diet, to the work of alternate dentists over the history of American dentistry, whittled down into some of the fallacies and blanket theories in the ADA today, all the way to understanding truly what a symmetrical bite is, to knowing what to do about it. This is Vincent Medici, Straight Talk on Health. We'll see you next week. It's been a pleasure. Bye bye.
It's good to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he's good to me.
He
sacrificed his life
that I
might be made free.
He will be
with me all the time.
He saved
the soul of mine.